From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening. I can't think of a better topic than Crime Victims' Rights Week. And to do that, I brought on victims' rights expert and violence expert, Alexis Moore. Alexis has been on the show before. Hi, Alexis. How are you?
Doing great, Dana. Thanks for having me back here on the Scared Monkeys Dana Pretzer Show. It feels really good to be back.
Well, you know, you can't get a better topic, I think, or a better week. You know, we hear about all these weeks for this and week for that, but we're all about protecting crime victims, doing what we can for crime victims. Tell us about Crime Victims Rights Week.
Oh, sure. I first, like most people, there's a week for everything, it seems like, anymore, a month or a topic, but in this particular time, it just feels good because crime victims' rights are finally making it to the forefront. We're out there advocating for victims. There's many of us, like myself and others, who are working very hard and dedicated to public safety. And I just don't think we get enough credit for what we do as far as making sure victims are taken care of, because so many are falling through the cracks. So tonight I just want to thank those that are members of law enforcement, our prosecutors, investigators, advocates, those that actually are out there in the trenches and doing all this hard work. Thank you so much. I mean, as a victim of crime, I'm thanking them as well as a fellow advocate. It's definitely a thankless job on many, many occasions, that's for sure.
Well, advocacy is one thing. What's the old saying? You know, you can blow smoke, but actually getting out into the trenches, I like that term, and doing something, whether it's, you know, helping a rape victim, volunteering at an organization, a shelter, the cop that's on the beat, the hospital worker, the lab tech, the rights advocate like yourself, someone out there. You know, we don't hear a lot about that because normally we focus on the media, and the media focuses on the high-profile cases, and we're just targeted into one little thing. But sadly, there's so much every day, every minute, every hour, is there not?
You bet. And one thing for sure, I have to admit that going through the whole process as a victim, I have to say, you know, sometimes it takes individual 1,000 calls, emails, years to overcome. And it's something that a lot of us just take for granted. We watch television, we see movies, and they have this, you know, happy ending and victims leaving the courtroom and everyone's hugging one another. But sadly, that's not always how it works. Many victims have no idea. You know, they get victimized, whether it be by sexual assault, domestic violence, cyber stalking, stalking, any crime, parents of murdered children. It's a horrendous experience to be victimized, and then oftentimes, unfortunately, you're traumatized by the same system that's in place there to actually care for you and supposed to be out there to, quote-unquote, give you justice. You know, it's really tough.
Let's talk about re-victimization. You know, we see it in the movies, I guess. We don't see it a lot on TV. If you're a real news junkie, you might follow it a little bit, you know, watching Nancy Grace and all those other sorts of shows. But unless you're there, unless you're involved in it, unless you've been a victim and been re-victimized through the system, whether it's just getting on the stand or having to give your story 15 times, or, you know, ask questions, put under a microscope, so to speak, a lot of people really don't understand what re-victimization is. Can you explain it?
Oh, sure. You know, Dana, it's incredible. Re-victimization is a word that just recently has come to the forefront, like you've mentioned, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that victims are vulnerable. They're probably the weakest form of life when it comes to comparing a victim. I try to compare them either to a very young infant or to that of an elderly person, because the vulnerability is unbelievable. Most folks, they see human beings and they think, oh, someone's a victim of crime, someone takes care of them, or there's this net or some kind of bubble or what have you, but there really isn't. And when they're reaching out and they're doing everything right, like most victims do, you know, they report the sexual assault, they report this horrific, torturous rape or domestic battery or stalking and all these things, they're having to open up and share information that most of us would never even dare talk about, much less with strangers, in a courtroom full of strange people and cold. I mean, it's just the most cold and disheartening experience. And then when you have folks that maybe are too keen on helping victims, and they're just there doing their job, and for whatever reason, they're having a, quote, bad day, It's just amazing. I mean, a victim can be traumatized so severely that I think sometimes the justice system is actually involved with re-victimization. And I hope that this is something that tonight we can talk about just a little bit.
Yep.
Because those that are out there working and plugging away, you have a job. If you're in public safety, a lot of times we forget, you know, it's a thankless job. It's tough. And I'm a big supporter of law enforcement and prosecutors and judges. I know that we need them. They're valuable and definitely wouldn't want to live without one or them as a whole. But if you're having that bad day or you're just not up to it, I tell you, when it comes to public safety and serving victims, it's just a real tough call because you're not, you know, pushing paper in a cubicle. You're dealing with people's lives and they're real-life human beings that are so vulnerable and so susceptible to negativity. It really, I mean, turning their lives upside down is just the best way to describe it. And unfortunately, there really isn't anyone holding folks accountable who are not doing their job. And at the same token, we're also not thanking those that are doing a fantastic job. And I'm hoping with Survivors in Action, one of our key projects is called No Victim Left Behind. Mm-hmm. We are reaching out and trying to thank across the world, even the nation, those individuals that are doing the right thing. We just don't get enough a reward for those out there, I don't believe, that are doing the right thing. Because I believe in that inspiration. I think it's possible to inspire everyone to do the right thing. And those that aren't doing the right thing, they need to find some other thing to do. I mean, this is a very serious, often life or death circumstance that a victim is facing. And, you know, you have to be brave, and they're going through all this process. And they deserve the same respect as we all would appreciate and want for our own loved ones and friends, family, and that sort of thing.
Education, education, education. That's three words that I like to use when it comes to anything, whether it's domestic violence, to you name it. And education for those that are involved, the public, even the news media, is so important. And it's something I think, again, when we talk about the system and re-victimization, where we fail. You know, you've got the old beat cop that's been on the force maybe too long, has never really been trained. The small sheriff's department where they just don't have the money to do it. You have the law enforcement officer's wife or girlfriend, whatever, who's just terrified because the system that's supposed to protect her is failing her. And it's that whole education thing, Alexis, and I think we need to do things a lot better. How do we do that? How do we motivate the government, who's more interested in talking about Chrysler today or whatever the car company this is, and flying a jet over New York to scare the heck out of people, $300,000+. I'm sure your organization would like 10% of that to help victims. How do we get the government to get off their fannies and start focusing on this epidemic?
Well, you know, for one thing, Danny hit on a key point. We need more victims like myself and others to start speaking out. And I know today with the internet, it's a simple thing to do. It's at the public library. You can get free access to the computer. You can go on blogs, websites. Go to SurvivorsInAction.com. Go to your ScaredMonkeys.com. Go and actually voice your opinion. You can even do so anonymously. But I'm telling you, once victims start speaking out, as I discussed today with a lot of folks, there are millions of us out there, victims of crime. We can overcome just about any obstacle just because of the sheer numbers. The volume of individuals that have been victimized surpasses any number of government agencies and individuals. But we must speak out. We have to be more than a news headline. We have to be more than talk and chatter in a movie theater and entertainment purposes and all these things that they're pointing to crime victims and what have you. We've got to really take note and say, we are here, we are human beings, and we need attention.
One thing that really,
you know, yes, go ahead.
One thing that really bugs me, and it's a multimedia era that we have today, internet, movies, TV, you name it. But it seems like there's a glorification of the offender, whether it's something as dopey as Batman and putting the Joker on a pedestal, saying how wonderful, or making it look like he's just this wonderful guy that goes around and robs banks. When you look at that, and you look at the violence that we have today in media, in music, in the internet, whatever, and the impressionable young kids that are out there that watch this, or the psychopath that watches it and thinks that it's cool, whatever happened to an old-fashioned family values type of movie where you sit down and really enjoy what you're watching? You know, I got to admit, when you watch TV today, I can't think of five shows that are on network television right now that I even know the names of, let alone will sit down and watch with my family, because a lot of it is just garbage.
Exactly, and the I mean, we're so desensitized as a nation, as a people, and this is a worldwide issue. violence is everywhere, as you say. Even young children, you know, it's just, to me, like you say, it's phenomenal. And I'm a 70s child, so to speak, so I'm not real old, not real young, but I have to admit that, you know, things are totally different. And unfortunately, with technology, young people are having access to things that I'm just telling you, I had no idea would even be possible as a youngster, much less now. I mean, it's just crazy. But again, accountability, being a member of society that's productive, it all has to do with folks policing one another, too. And this is very important. I mean, if someone sees something and knows something that's wrong, it's up to all of us to say, wow, this isn't okay. And just being turning the other cheek, so to speak, is basically giving the perpetrator the upper hand. And that's something that I just think that if more people can see that the value in one human being is, I mean, you can, as a human being, make a difference. One person can make a difference. I truly believe this, or I wouldn't be saying it. I mean, it's amazing when a person speaks out in a second, you can get across the airwaves of the internet now to billions of folks with a click of a mouse. So I have faith that we can turn things around, but it's going to take more and more people like yourself, me, others, to speak out and say, you know what, this is not all right.
Alexis Moore is here, and we're talking about the Crime Victims' Rights Week. Last question. When you see the high-profile cases like Chris Brown and Rihanna, and you know, when you see the picture of Rihanna, whether that was a picture taken by law enforcement or not, doesn't matter. I had to think back to Nicole Brown Simpson. Now, I'm not comparing the two cases at all, but I am comparing the scar of domestic violence. When you look at the evidence, and the evidence is what you see in this case, I'm a consequences kind of guy. I've always been. And I believe that if you do the crime, you should do the time, and maybe, even though that it is a mental condition and some people just won't stop, that they know the minute that they raise a hand to their wife or their girlfriend, they're going to go to jail, and that's just it. But today, with plea bargains and all this kind of stuff, technicalities and the way that the law is set up, we just don't seem to have the consequences. Am I being too old-fashioned, Alexis?
Absolutely not, Dana. You know, I looked at Rihanna's face, and I thought for a moment about myself, being the domestic violence survivor. And like you, too, you know, we think about Nicole Brown and her life being tragically lost, and all these individuals out there, Heather Thompson, Regan Martin, there's many cases that just recently are making the mainstream media. But again, the message to batterers is not yet clear that they will face the consequences, and women are fearful, and society's allowing the batterer to be empowered. And in most cases, I hate to say it, the perpetrator is empowered just purely because our system is inept. We're overtaxed, overburdened, underfunded, and the majority of violent offenders, unfortunately, they know, luckily, that they will not be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, just because we can't, here in the United States, house everybody. We don't have the systems in place to keep up with all that's going on. I mean, it's a tragedy, but again, I believe if all of us unite together as we are this evening, talk about it, get out there, voice our opinion, vote, stay on top of the issues, and bring back some of these family values. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know what, this is not okay. And I'm one to say that I believe, again, that power of the human voice, human touch, we can all make a difference, but we have to be brave. And victims of crime and their family members must speak out and help to be a catalyst for change.
Throw a plug in for your website, please, Alexis.
You bet. Survivors in Action, survivorsinaction.com. And again, our mission is no victim left behind. If you are a victim of crime, or your friend, family member is being victimized by crime and you need some assistance, feel free to come to our website. You can contact us directly, survivorsinaction.com. And Dana Presser, thank you again for having me on the show. It's been fantastic.
Always a pleasure, Alexis. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. That's Alexis Moore. She's a victims' rights advocate. We're going to take a break. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Presser Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. It was always a kick to have Carmen Mercer and other members of the Minutemen Project on the program, and tonight it's even a bigger kick to have Chris Simcox. Chris is the co-founder of the Minutemen Project, and he has formally announced he will challenge incumbent John McCain in the 2010 U.S. Senate GOP primary election, and I'm very pleased to have him on the air tonight. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Dana, thanks for having me on. Sorry about the background noise.
No, that's okay. I understand, and I know you're busy. Listen, we've covered the border issue many times. I believe the Bush administration failed miserably when it came to covering the border. John McCain blew smoke more than he protected the people of the United States, as far as I'm concerned. I think it's fantastic that you are running for the Senate in 2010. Tell us what that's all about.
Well, we certainly want to establish that this is not a one-issue race.
No.
And it's not about the border issue per se. This is about a lack of representation for the voters in Arizona. We have an incumbent who basically takes the approach of that this is my seat, that it's mine for life.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party is there to back him up. And John McCain just does not represent the conservative values of Arizona. And so the voters are desperately seeking somebody that's different, an alternative. And we decided to jump out there and jump into this race to challenge the status quo. I mean, this is about challenging D.C. It's about challenging our entire system. And, of course, in our Senate, which is entrenched with self-funded millionaire politicians who seem to feel that once they gain that seat, that it's theirs for life. And we have a different message for them, we the people, that we want to take back this seat. We want to give it back to the voters. We want to educate voters about exactly what a senator's job is in the first place, because I think we've lost our way, according to our founding fathers, and what their position is supposed to entail. So we're going to challenge John McCain. We're going to challenge the Republicans, challenge the Democrats, challenge the system by wrangling this seat back and giving it back to the people. Whether I'm their selection or not is irrelevant. It's
right.
About jumping into the race long enough to challenge McCain, challenge the status quo, and like I said, re-educate citizens and say, if you want this seat back, here it is. Whether you choose me or not is fine, but we will not be forced into a situation where we have to choose between the lesser of evils in 2 years again.
You know, I think you said it best when you said, we the people, it's we the people for the people, whatever. There's the economic crisis that we're hearing about now, Chrysler today, where pandemics, flus, the border, of course, crime, punishment, you name it. All of a sudden now, when you look at conservative values, not only in Arizona, but across North America, that those values have been set aside for a popularity contest and someone who can read a teleprompter, you've got a big task ahead of you, sir. How are you going to handle that?
Well, we certainly do, and it starts with the fact that we're able to match John McCain toe-to-toe with running a national campaign rather than just a campaign in Arizona. We have national recognition. This issue has national recognition. And this is sort of me standing up, and I'm not the only one. There will be others, and there are others now that are standing up riding this wave of, I hate to use a sort of a liberal phrase, but this empowerment that we have as citizens about we're not at all satisfied with the representation we have in Washington. And our conservative values are not just being, I guess, ignored, but basically there's a systematic, I guess you could say, persecution type of mentality towards family values and conservative values now. And that's emanating from the White House. I mean, that's unconscionable that we're going to turn the tables and now label people because of their beliefs when it comes to conservative values some sort of extremist or even un-American.
Protecting,
so we certainly have a big job.
Protecting the border, Chris, and I know you've talked it and done it because you've actually gone out and protected the border. And you and Carmen and all the people involved in the Minuteman Project, it's much bigger than that. It is so important, and I know you're not just a one-issue candidate, but how important is protecting the border to you, even today now with these issues, the Mexican issue, you name it, whether it's pandemics, drugs, organized crime, the borders are so porous that even John McCain doesn't know where the 9/11 hijackers came from. Poor Canada is still getting blamed.
No, it's true. And under John McCain's watch, and frankly, under the last three administrations, under their noses, they've allowed this problem to fester and grow to the point where you now have an organized criminal entity that has been on the verge of toppling the government of Mexico, let alone controlling our borders, and now have have organizations set up in over 213 cities, U.S. cities, according to a recent Department of Justice report. And these are not just gangs. These are legitimate, organized criminal operations that are comprised mostly of illegal aliens who've entered this country illegally, and not just from Mexico. There's a huge problem with the Russian mafia underground here and the Chinese Asian mafia underground, all comprised of, it's estimated, according to the Secretary of State's office, that there could be upwards of 2 to 3 million people from China in this country illegally, also from the former Soviet Union. And so we have a national security crisis, and that was what... that's what got me into this issue in the first place. It was really never about illegal immigration. Illegal immigration was nothing but a symptom of failed government, and frankly, nothing but a symptom of dereliction of duty on behalf of our elected officials. This is about national security and public safety. And like I said, when you have a criminal enterprise, an organization that rivals Al-Qaeda in their ability to create havoc and to perpetrate heinous crimes of violence on human beings, look, that should be considered terrorism. And that's what I think, that's how we should be addressing our borders and these cartels that own the drug routes, also the human smuggling routes.
Absolutely. One last question for you, Chris. Chris Simcox is here. 2010, the election's coming right around the corner. You're going to be busy. What's next for you?
Well, what next is just a campaign to reach out to the people to undo some of the character assassination and the vilification that's gone on through the mainstream media. It's amazing how many people I meet now, even today, who've never met me and said, "Wow, I thought you had horns and a tail and they were some evil person." And, it couldn't be further from the truth. In fact, it's very gratifying now that a bunch of my former students, all the way back to kindergarten, first grade, are putting together a student supporting Simcox for the Senate organization, which is great that they're coming out saying, "No, you don't know who this man is," and for you to judge him on the way the media has portrayed us is intellectually dishonest. So it's great that we need to get out, we need to dispel the rumors and the innuendo and the labels that have been cast upon us, and say, "No, this is about America and its values, and we need to stand up now and fight back against what's happening in Washington and go there." And like I said, the most important thing is to give this representative seat back to the people. John McCain has missed over 40% of his votes during his tenure in the Senate. That leaves Arizona without representation. And so we want to give this back to the people.
Absolutely. Well said, Chris Simcox, 2010 U.S. Senate GOP election. Give a plug for your website, sir.
Yes, SimcoxForSenate.com, SimCox, for spelled out, F-O-R, SimcoxForSenate.com. We need your support. Please go there and read my blogs. That'll give you an insight into what this campaign's all about.
Absolutely. Love to have you back on. And guys like you and all your people with the Minutemen and Joe Arpaio, the sheriff down there who's been vilified lately, we need more like you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it, Dan. I look forward to speaking with you and your audience again.
Talk to you again soon. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. You know, when it comes to this, and when it comes to guys like Chris Simcox, you need a straight shooter. I'm not talking about a guy that can hit the target right bullseye. I'm talking about a straight shooter. He says what he means, and he means what he says. And if you can get that, that's half the battle. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and it's rare that I can get my next guest, Robin Sachs, ADA, out of L.A., that rhymes, at home, but tonight's nothing but the Sachs segment. Actually comes from Sachs Central, can we call it that? I don't know.
Oh, exactly, I like that.
Sachs Central with Robin Sachs, I don't know. What's going on with you? I hear, because I didn't get to listen, I'm ashamed, I'll have to... to punish myself later, but I didn't get to hear this week's Justice Interrupter show. But I hear you guys did some body language stuff. What's up with that?
Well, you know what? Actually, this is a great show. I'm kind of bummed that you missed it, Dana, because really, we had not only were we, spectacular as we three women always are. However, we also had three amazing guests, and they were all so different. Really, everybody had just really so much offer. We had Jamie Levine, who is the founder of Mothers Against Predators, and she spoke a little bit about her organization, and really her organization focuses on the internet as being this the place that we need to stop the bleeding for predators out there. And she comes with her very well respected. She's very well respected and has a nice posse of people supporting her, and she was phenomenal. And then we also had Dr. Lillian Glass, and I think that's where you're getting into the body language stuff. Dr. Lillian Glass is a psychologist. She's frequently on Nancy Grace, and she does talk about how, you know, body language and you know, the things that you and I know and the things pretty much a lot of people know intuitively, she put into amazing vocabulary and words for us in terms of talking about how you can tell when people are truthful, what types of things you can look at for stress factors and so forth. And then we had Clara, and I don't want to botch her last name, but she came from an organization called Free Silva, and she talked about her Armenian Christian cousin who has been held and jailed in Iran. And it was just a different take on, you know, we spent so much time talking about kind of the domestic crimes. It was a nice change of pace, and all of our guests were not only amazingly articulate, but had a lot of really informative things to share.
I just had Chris Simcox on. He's running against John McCain in 2010, and he's the guy that founded the Minutemen. Remember the guys that go down and protect the border between Texas and Mexico, California and Mexico, all that sort of stuff. And I've done lots of work with the Minutemen over the years. But when you look at this so-called pandemic, this so-called swine flu, whatever you want to call it, but there's such a bigger picture here now with you know, the illegal immigrant issue. They're coming across the line, they're killing policemen, they're coming across the line, they're not being picked up. Sheriffs like Joe Arpaio are getting criticized for doing his job and trying to enforce illegal immigration, and now all of a sudden we're getting disease coming from Mexico. But you know, that panic, you know, you could get that from anywhere. You can take a trip to Africa or somewhere and come back with some kind of a bug. But really, the big picture, and you said it well, Robin, crime comes in many different shapes and sizes, isn't just, Casey Anthony. It could be the drug runners that are running across Mexico, the organized crime from overseas, all the stuff that's going on. What do you think, as an ADA, is the government doing enough to deal with the organized crime from other places besides the United States?
Well, I have a lot of issues. I'm very passionate about immigration issues because I do think that a lot of our troubles begin within the realm of immigration. Although on this issue with the swine flu thing, I don't know if my feelings fall into the immigration area, or as much as I'm kind of trying to weed out the hype from the facts and the myth from the fiction. And I'm really having just trouble trying to wrap my mind around how serious the problem is, or has this been, you know, a CNN created, media created, drug pharmaceutical created, you know, I'm not a big conspiracy theory person, but I mean, I read an article that said that the effects of that swine flu are no worse than the common flu.
Right.
And when it just settled me as really uncomfortable with it. We're on the, you know, level 5 alert, borders potentially being closed down, don't travel, and I'm one of those people affected by the travel. But wondering, you know, is this really a pandemic, or is this just more of an epidemic of media insanity?
You know, that's well said. But then when you look at cases, and I'm not going to quote particular names tonight, but you look at the immigration issue, and I don't want to tie the two in too much to the epidemic or the so-called, you know, and maybe it's media created or not. But when you look at a sheriff, and you know, we all know who Joe Arpaio is in Arizona, the sheriff who feeds his prisoners bologna and makes them wear pink coveralls and sleep in tents, and he's out there trying to enforce immigration laws. Yet there are places that aren't enforcing them, and the guy that gets picked up gets released. He goes out and kills a policeman, or he kills a family, or he does whatever. It's that kind of tightening of the border, I think, and maybe I never phrased the first question well enough, that we need to really concentrate on, because the problem's just not getting any better. We're not hearing about it because we're hearing more about Chrysler, but there's just that big problem with the border.
Absolutely. I mean, and there is an absolute border problem, and the, you know, there are so many issues with immigration, and it really is frustrating. And here in California, we have a lot of people that come in from Mexico. We have a lot of people coming to our country to, you know, earn and reap the benefits. Then they come here and commit crimes. Then they get deported. Then they sneak their way back in, and they, you know, and under some sort of different alias and some sort of different name, and the system hasn't yet to catch up to them. And yet, the thing that is so unbelievable is that it's exactly for immigration consequences that hold up a lot of justice and pleas from happening, because people are like, well, I don't, you know, it's not going to get me deported. And that's a really frustrating aspect of the whole thing, too.
What's going on this week with Kaylee and Casey Anthony, or is it finally going to slow down a little bit?
No, actually, this week's kind of breaking story that happened, and it was covered. I didn't watch Nancy Grace tonight, but on Jane Velez Mitchell, and I was also interviewed on this story, is this ugly coping potential defense that may be the defense that's going to come out from Jose Baez yesterday when he, I don't know if it was exactly yesterday, may have been a couple of days ago now, that Jose Baez had an exclusive interview with the Welsh reporters and said, you know, once everybody understands and sees exactly why and hears why Casey acted the way she did, there will be a very good reason and justification for her behavior, alluding to your famed and favorite, you know, peeing on the toilet seat, or the peeing on the floor and the beer bottle shots, which I know is your favorite thing to talk about. And so he won't say what it is, but he made reference to a case, the Summers case, I believe was the name of it, that was where a woman who was accused of murdering her husband went out afterwards and got breast implants, and it did actually play a huge role in the determination of that case. And they called this syndrome ugly coping. You know, it's supposed to somehow negate the consciousness of guilt argument, which we know is the real argument of, you know, you didn't report your kid, you're partying, you're drinking, you seem to be having a celebration of your life, and how to explain that away. And I just think it's, frankly, it's a fiction defense. I don't think that, I've never heard of it before. Ugly coping to me equals guilty, but you know, whatever, Jose Baez turning tricks.
Well, it's a tight case from the prosecution standpoint. Is this something where the defense lawyer just sits back and waits and sees what is said this week and tries to come up with, well, maybe we'll try this defense, or is this something that you think that they've come up with all along?
Well, there's certain points of this case that they know that they're going to have to deal with, whether or not, I mean, they legally need to or not. You know, as we know, the burden is on the prosecution. There's no requirement for the prosecution to be able to show motive. However, one of the things that's going to happen is there's going to be a whole bunch of behaviors that are going to be put together and a whole bunch of evidence that's going to be strung together that is going to be part of the prosecution's analysis of this case, where basically, you know, it's the totality of the circumstances approach. And the only way the defense can fight that is to then start picking apart all the circumstances. And so one of the big circumstances is going to be, look at the failure to report little Kaylee missing, the lack of emotion, the behaviors and journal entries and partying and all the stuff that she did following, you know, the supposed to be the worst time of your life. And so the defense has known and will have to know all along what they're going to do to explain that. And if they can start planting the seeds of some and allude to some, you know, psychological phenomenon out there that might exist, maybe they can help taint the jury pool.
The juries buy it. You know, when you see a case like this, and it's going to be difficult to find a jury member that hasn't heard about it, will they look at something like that? I know everyone has a right to the defense under the law and innocent until proven guilty, all that sort of stuff. But, wow, you know, he's grasping at straws, I think.
I think he's grasping at straws. You know, sometimes, not that I think it's going to matter in this case. However, I think that this case will result in a conviction. However, there are things like that if a jury wants to find reasonable doubt, that they kind of said, okay, we don't want to convict this person, they will look for reasons to find reasonable doubt. Even though jurors are instructed in every state not to consider punishment or penalty and are not to be impassioned either for the prosecution or against the prosecution or for the defense or against the defense. The fact of the matter is we all come in with passions and prejudices, and even though we don't want to think about sentences, in every juror I've spoken to, not on my cases, but since I've been on my leave of absence from the DA's office, I've spoken to many people who sat on panels, and I've said, you know, Frank, can you tell me if you've thought about, did you think about punishment? And there's not one person that didn't say, yeah, we knew that this person was going to do this amount of time. And so if that idea that she's being unfairly punished comes into play, then I could see that a silly defense like this ugly coping syndrome could be the thing that a jury would want to hang their hand on. Look at OJ.
Yeah, for sure. Robin Sachs is here with her weekly Nothing But the Sachs segment. Someone just said dinner and Sachs. No, I'm sorry. I got a couple Nothing But the Sachs. Every time I come on here, I keep getting suggestions to change the name, but actually I like Nothing But the Sachs. Art Harris is going to come on in a little bit, and we're going to talk about Haley Cummings. There's a case, and I don't know how much you've followed it. I think the good journalist that you are, you have. There's a case we're not hearing as much about, but it's another case where, what's the term I'm looking for here? Parental misconduct? How's that? And this poor little kid, and the Department of Social Services and the courts and all this sort of stuff, in my opinion, have terribly failed this child. And I hope she's alive. I hope it was an abduction. We know that there aren't many stranger abductions. There's usually a connection somewhere. But your thoughts on Haley Cummings?
Well, you know, I'm really saddened by the lack of coverage that the case has gotten as of late. Not that, you know, every case out there is properly reported, because as we know, so many cases happen and occur in cities and counties throughout the country that never, ever, ever get a lick of media. And so, you know, shame on all of us for those cases not being out there more. But Haley Cummings is a case that is particularly troubling to me because there are, besides the parental irresponsibility, there is something very wrong about the way that the father has been involved with these very young women and girlfriends, and the kind of all these tangential issues that really trouble me as a sex crimes prosecutor, that I want to know what they're doing and what they're doing and that they're doing something about it. And when I don't hear about it, I worry that the heat is off and they're not looking at all the angles. So that troubles me. The other thing is what message does it send to the community or to people out there who are watching the news who think, oh, okay, well, you can be out there in the news and you can sound like something totally fishy is going on. You can have a custody battle breakout in the middle of this. You can have a marriage breakout in the middle of this, and then we lose interest. Frankly, the Octomom almost got more coverage than this did, if you look at it in terms of number of days.
Isn't that sick for sure? Your new book, Predators and Child Molesters, What Every Parent Needs to Know to Keep Kids Safe, now available on Amazon.com. You're going to be busy. You're going to be promoting the book. And I always ask this to authors, and usually you've come on the show as a ADA, or we talk about crime or talk about this or whatever. But I always ask an author, when you write your book, and your book is sitting on the shelf in the bookstore, what is it about that book that you want people to see the first thing to pick up and get their attention? You know, to take a look at it, thumb through it a little bit, and go and buy it.
Well, the thing that I think separates my book on this subject from any other book out there is that it truly is the one-stop shop for everything you need to know about child sexual assault. And not just child sexual assault. If you just, you know, put a line through all the times that I've written children in there, you can apply this to rape and adult sex crimes as well. And what I find that's so frustrating, especially when you're in the throes of parenthood or the throes of victimization or the throes of the courthouse, what the court system, whatever it may be, there are thousands and thousands of resources out there on the internet, but yet not one succinct place that you can go to and completely trust to get all of your answers, all of your questions answered. And so I've vetted that for everyone. I've done that internet research for everyone. I've taken my personal experience. I've gone through every book that there is on the subject. I've looked at it and I've compiled it basically, succinctly, and gone through different people's opinion. And it really is the guidebook and answer book for how to keep your kids safe from predators. And that's what I want people to see when they pick it up, that it's an easy read, it's not complicated, it's quick, you can read it question at a time and put it down, you don't have to read it in order, you don't have to read all the questions if you don't want. It's meant to be really, really user-friendly, keeping in mind that we live in Twitter society, that people speak in, you know, 40 characters or less, and speak in terms of status updates on Facebook. So I've given it in the shortest way I possibly can.
Okay, you got to educate me with this Twitter thing. I'm fairly computer knowledgeable. I've been doing the show for just about 11 years now, all this sort of stuff. But this Twitter, I don't get it. You know, if I'm going to write down, I walked outside, I went out downstairs, I'm eating, I'm combing my hair now. You know, why are people interested in that stuff?
You know, the Twitter thing, I have to say myself, I don't really necessarily understand it, only because I'm also, personally, I'm on Facebook, so Twitter to me is just a status update on Facebook. And
yeah.
Frankly, I don't really think that everyone wants to know what I'm doing every minute of my day. I think check-ins every few days just serves the purpose. So for me, it doesn't have any personal benefit. But I can see how when there's a celebrity or news people or people who are covering really interesting stories and people want to know what's going on a moment-by-moment basis, in the heat of the moment, you know, they can get the Twitter update. But just like, you know, MySpace and Facebook were kind of about how many friends can you get and it becomes a popularity contest, it seems like this big kind of burst into Twitter land has really evolved into how many followers you can have without any bit of quality control on the information that's going out.
Well, it's weird, you know, and the information superhighway, the way that it is right now, I don't know if they're just running out of ideas on what to do, and it's not something that I'm overly interested in. Anyway, Robin Sachs, ADA, get her book. It's in the show notes, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Have a good, safe week.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. That's Robin Sachs, ADA, on leave. Did I hear her say that? Los Angeles County. But you see Robin on Nancy Grace and Larry King and Jane Velez Mitchell and all these shows, because she is an excellent voice, not only for victims, but as a crime analyst, because she's been there, done that. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Alrighty, we're back. My last guest, Robin Sachs, and I were talking about Hayley Cummings, and one thing that we both agreed on is the lack of coverage. We just don't see enough about this important case. However, if you go to Art Harris's blog, www.artharris.com, you'll know Art as a crime investigator, reporter, someone who's been on the Nancy Grace shows and like that, covering these stories. He has done a great job on the Hayley Cummings case. We narrowed it down to parental misconduct. This kid was not protected. I see some stories on Art's blog that she could be alive, a top cop might say. So I thought, why not go to the source? Art Harris, welcome to the program, sir.
Dana, I love your show. It's great to be with you.
Hayley Cummings, am I wrong? We're just not seeing enough coverage about this case. It's important, and it's high profile, but it just seems to have slipped aside a little bit.
I think it's 60, 70 miles away from Orlando and a world away from the kind of coverage that, Casey Anthony has been getting. And, that case has everything. It's a much more of a, I guess, the mother of the accused is slicker. She's urbane. She's a party girl. There are lots of pictures out there. There's it's got a lot of layers. Here, you have an unsolved case. They haven't found a body like they have over in the Anthony case. And you have a very rural sort of, I guess people have described as, a Jerry Springer meets CSI. And so initially a pretty little girl gone missing, 5 years old. It has the formula for all the shows, Nancy Grace, Jane Velez Mitchell, where I was on tonight, and an old friend, and these stories grab people, by the heart. But if you don't have breaks and in the case, people tend to lose interest. And so what I just got got hooked on it and got some sources. And, you know, of course, I had met one of the pro bono private investigators who was down there, Cobra Williams Dobbs, who's a very colorful character, and had followed him around and done some shooting with him. And he kind of mixed things up a little bit, going into the different neighborhoods, gotten to be friends initially with Ronald Cummings. And I got interviews with Ronald and Misty and, you know, a lot of the cast of characters. The mother went out into the woods with Ronald's mother, who thought she had seen something one day and took us out. I had my camera rolling. So, you know, suddenly, you're behind the scenes, and it's very tough once you put your boots in the swamp and you meet these people and you see how much, you know, all of them love this little girl, even though they are, being interviewed by the cops for leads, because the police do not believe it's a stranger abduction, but somebody not in the family who knows the family, someone who had the opportunity to be with the family. You know, you get hooked on a case like that, and it's very tough. It's been very tough, Dana, for me to let it go.
Yeah, and you're so right. And all you have to do is take a look at the picture of Haley Cummings, and you see this sweet little girl. And you know the stats the same as I do, Art. Stranger abductions are rare. It's usually a connection some way. Let's look at the law enforcement perspective here. Are they used to cases like this? Are they investigating this case the way that they should? Or is there actually a stranger that's out there that they're missing?
Well, to be fair to these folks, Putnam County, not very large. The sheriff, Jeff Hardy, just elected. Suddenly, 6 weeks later, he walks into this case. It's quite a tsunami, of media and the kind of attention that they're used to getting is not a missing girl with a glare of the networks and the country on them. And so, what they did, they were prepared because they have what they call the TARP program, the abduction, the child abduction response team.
Sure, yeah.
And so they were able to bring in state investigators. The FBI, flew their behavioral experts in from Quantico. They've given the county full access to the labs. They took away the van that the babysitter, who is now married to my father, Ronald Cummings, a blue family van, and they went over that with a fine-tooth comb. I was at Misty Crosland's family's house when the law enforcement returned it about a month ago, and, covered in dust and a big scratch down the door, which raises questions, how did that scratch get there? But in terms of how the cops proceeded, the first thing, you search the crime scene. They had dogs at the dumpster. That has not really gotten the explanation it deserved, because a lot of people have been critical, saying they didn't go back and search the dumpster again. But actually, they did. I mean, according to Captain Dominic Piscatello, who I've been speaking with regularly, he's the lead investigator, head of the task force. They have, just seven members of the Putnam County Sheriff's Department, but then they're able to layer on to that, Dana, the much bigger, experts in other departments from the FBI on, as I said. And so, they of course went back over where the child was, the scene. Dogs hit that dumpster, and at least my sources think may have gotten a little excited, or not the fact there was a body there, but it was a female sanitary napkin that the dogs hit on, and they then branched out, which this hasn't gotten much coverage, and hit all the dumpsters in the county, and very methodically, and that was done a couple of times in case they felt somebody, came back and dumped a body. I mean, only a stupid killer would throw a body, you'd think, in a dumpster, but
right.
This is a place that has an incredible number of lakes and swamps and rivers, and so there's just so many places you could dispose of a body. Alligator infested swamps are very close to where this little girl was living with her dad and Misty Cummings, the 7-year-old babysitter he later married.
It's a forensic investigator's nightmare as far as body recovery goes. When you look at the Anthony case, that one was just bizarre to find the remains of poor little Kaylee just flew a few blocks away. But this case, Art Harris is here, and you know Art from shows like Nancy Grace, and of course his blog, TheBaldTruth, at ArtHarris.com. This case, Art, is just another one that the public craves for, although we're not seeing as much cable news coverage as we should. What about these cases do the public look for? They sit back. Of course, all you got to do is look at the little girl. But there's different correlates. This, you know, the father and then the marriage and then the cable coverage and then the person dressed in black and all the sort of stuff. Is that just today's society that loves this, or is it just we never seem to hear about these cases like this 10, 15 years ago, but every week we're seeing more and more.
I started out in newspapers, and from the Atlanta paper to San Francisco Examiner. I was at the Washington Post and worked for Bob Woodward, who was the Atlanta bureau chief, and covered all sorts of things like the Atlanta missing and murdered children's case, the first African American serial killer, Wayne Williams. And in that case, for example, in the early 80s, you had a city in fear,
right,
because children were turning up missing and then found. In the woods and in the rivers, and so that was something that was an epidemic of fear. In this small town, they wanted to be reassured there was not a predator out there snatching kids. And I think by the law enforcement putting out the word that they do not believe it was a stranger abduction, if it's somebody known to this family or some sort of drug connection, was it a revenge for some drug deal gone wrong? A lot of the people in this world, from Ronald, the father, has a string of drug arrests, no convictions. Misty Crosland spent the weekend before the disappearance on the road with another young woman nicknamed Nene, who was driving her around for this, I call it a revenge romance with a light-skinned African-American named White Boy Greg. And, so you've got this cast of characters. It really is, as I said, Jerry Springer meets CSI. And America loves a train wreck.
Yeah.
And I think, the Anthony case has people riveted for a number of horrific reasons as well. But the images don't seem to match the horror of a murder. You have an attractive young woman. You have, at least on the surface, a good-looking family. A retired law enforcement officer is the father of the accused. Here you have, I don't want to say one step above Deliverance, but, you have this beautiful little girl who belongs or was born into, a very, I guess, Jane Velez Mitchell the other night described it when I was on her show as Dysfunction Junction.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think people were initially horrified that this little girl's missing, and then as I began breaking stories at ArtHarris.com, the Bald Truth thing, they began to see that it's a window onto the epidemic of drugs in our society, especially when they hit young people in the small, poor county, and you've got 25-year-old guys hanging out with 15, 16-year-olds, marrying them, getting them pregnant, or not marrying them, but just having babies. And so what's happened here is I think you have several young women who had been vying for the attentions of this sort of, at least slick in their minds, young man named Ronald Cummings, who drives a red pickup truck with the letters phrased across the back window that says, "Now only God can judge me."
Oh, jeez. Well, only
and,
good. Yeah.
that replaced a former slogan on his window that said, "Grave digger."
Yeah.
I'm not going to go there, but you have a classic Dr. Phil cast of characters. Maury Povich. I mean, these are people who didn't have the advantages that most people have, education and exposure to whatever motivates people to keep moving forward in a positive way, but they get sucked into this negative world, and the consequences when drugs and young hormones meet, nothing good can come of that.
No, that's for sure. And like you said, Art, America loves a train wreck. Art Harris, thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's great to be with you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. That's Art Harris from the ArtHarris.com, the Bald Truth blog. Check it out. You'll see Art on shows like Nancy Grace and Jane Velez Mitchell, and you name it. He's there. He's been around a long time. That's it. That's tonight's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can pick up podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, leave comments. I hear now you can even pick up recipes there. No, that's not true. And remember, the blog is scaredmonkeys.com. My name is Dana Pretzer, and we'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.